can you sell me a pen, 10 million rand? I beg your pardon? It's only 4 rand 20. He said, yeah, but I'll pay you 10 million, you give me 5 back. Okay, the government authority to do deals has become an authority to invent value and share it.
Mark, hello, good morning.
I'll tell you what, we've got this four-day week, three-day week, okay? I mean, we're in the midst of a gemor. You wake up in the morning and you don't know whether it's work or no work. And we're going to pay for this, hey? We're going to pay for this off time.
Okay.
Because spendy, earny, not so much, okay? And it's going to, everyone's credit cards are going to be prop full at the end of April, all right? Anyway, so... happy holidays.
But yeah. Can I just make a point about the public holidays? You know, I do think, judging by the number of stores that are open on Easter Monday, it seems like South Africans are just slowly just ignoring these public holidays. Because I actually don't know what the legislative situation is.
100%.
But my spa in my little town is now open on Easter Friday, on Saturday, and on Easter Monday. You know, so it sort of argues that the situation has changed.
You can go to Sandton City, everything will be open. Because the religion most followed around the world is the dollar religion. Okay.
So, yes. Although the Pope did die over the Easter weekend, which is very poignant. And
ask me what my number of the week is, Tim. Ask me.
Okay. Mark, what's your number of the week?
My number of the week is 88.
Okay.
Okay. And I'll tell you why.
Right.
There are three significant men that circle the number 88. The first one is obviously the Pope, who died at the age of 88.
Right.
And by all accounts, he was a Pope of the people. He's, even in his wishes on his burial, he seeks to be more modest. He didn't wear the papal shoes, and I think he broke some of the, you know, steeped traditions that made the church perhaps more removed from its parishioners than it otherwise would be. Do you have a view on the Pope? And then I'll get to, well, let me finish my list and then we can come back perhaps to the Pope.
Okay. Yeah. Go for it.
The second 88 is a guy called Klaus Schwab. Do you know who he is?
Yes, very well. Yeah.
He's Mr. World Economic Forum.
Right.
Okay. And I think he's still the chairman of the World Economic Forum and he's stepping down.
Yeah.
At the age of 88.
Okay.
Which is also now. And then the third guy is a guy you probably don't know. Is a guy called David Hockney, who's an artist who is 88 years old. And I watched a program on his life, one of his paintings, which I wouldn't have paid more than, say, 430 rand, sold for 70 million pounds. Okay. And so, it just gives you an idea of my artistic economic nous, how it all comes together. But he fascinated me. And here was a person, and just to digress for a second, who'd found his meaning of life at the age of 7.
Right.
From 7 to 88, which is quite a long time.
Right.
All he wanted to do was draw things and paint things and do things. You know, I'm not quite 88, but I'm at least 2/3 of the way there.
Right.
Tim, you know, have you found a purpose in life so central to your very existence that there's nothing else you want to do?
Yes, I have.
And what would that be?
It's journalism. You know,
when did you discover that?
In my first year of university, when I walked into the newsroom of the campus newspaper, I felt so immediately at home and so immediately. I was theoretically studying law, but I gradually spent more and more time in the dome offices than I did in the law lecturers. It was just during that time in apartheid, it was very difficult to be in a position to think freely and to be open and to be, you know, sort of engaged, but not so invested that you had to adopt a hard and fast ideological position. And it just, you know, it enables you to be curious. What I didn't know at the time was how little money I would earn in the space of 40 years doing journalism. Maybe if I knew that, I would have made a different choice.
No, you wouldn't have. You know, you should count yourself very, very lucky, my friend.
Yeah,
I mean, few people find and end up doing what they want to do when there's still a whole life ahead of them to do it. So you're a lucky man. And by the way, money is nothing more than a medium of exchange.
Okay.
And if your real currency in life is...
I thought we were praying to the god of money earlier.
We're talking about others. Okay. So we need to distinguish. We need to rise above the people we talk about, okay. For goodness sake. How are we going to get away with all this shit if we include ourselves? No, we mustn't do that. Never.
I want to make 2 points about the Pope.
Yeah.
Both of which are,
yes,
completely pointless and useless.
Good. Well, please go ahead. The listeners can't wait. Yeah.
I actually never knew where the phrase that the Pope's nose came from.
The chicken, on the chicken.
Yeah, on the chicken. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
But I was busy watching a program about cooking, and you know, there was a little sort of interlude about the Pope's nose, and it has to do with whether you are Catholic or Protestant. Because the Pope's nose idea arose in like the 18th century somewhere in Britain as a kind of an insult. So it looks like the nose of the then Pope, and it's also at the buttocks end of the chicken, and that's where the
praise... It's the chicken's bum, man. Let's get to the point here. Yes. Yeah.
Okay. Anyway, I have to say I did like this Pope.
Yeah.
I liked the idea of somebody out there who was free of the constraints of society in some ways and would just try and tell the truth. I mean, his last interaction was with the US vice president.
Yeah.
And he took the opportunity to lecture him about taking more care of migrants. You know, so
no,
I don't know how Vance accepted that idea, but... He did say he would pray for his health. So, you know,
no, that's a positive. By all accounts, yeah. And his favorite thing in the world wasn't, you know, architecture or, you know, art or choral music. He liked soccer. Okay. But then he does come from Argentina.
Yeah,
so, a man of the people. And
yeah. This
whole intriguing and interesting process of electing the next one and the black smoke and the white smoke is something we're all going to watch because it's a world phenomenon. And I also want to admire all of the other religious orders in the world who, it seems to me, have stood back respectfully of his passing. You know, there's been quiet. I mean, I think that's something not to take for granted that, you know, we spend so much of our time in religious, you know, juxtapositions and debates and even wars. And yet an event like this, you know, quietens everybody a little bit. And I noticed that and I'm grateful, for it.
Yeah. Do you know, there is a lesson in the Pope. Do you think that he improved the popularity of the Catholic Church or mitigated the enormous negative publicity about the Catholic Church? I mean, I think that was one of the reasons why he was designated, right? Mm,
I think the latter.
And I think he did.
I think so, but it's the latter. He mitigated the decline, maybe.
Yeah. But there is a lesson there, I think, for everybody involved in an organization which is going through hard times. And it's essentially that, you know, you need to stay the course rather than trying to just break everything.
I think it's much more simple than that. You know, I'm not sure what the course is because the course changes, but I think just be a nice person. You know, there is a universal definition of kindness and fair and all of these kinds of things, which I think crosses all barriers if we allow it to. And if that is the natural person that you are, that manifests in an extraordinary current of leadership, which is otherwise difficult to do on purpose.
Oh, yeah. No, good point.
I want to move away from such niceties. Yeah.
Yeah.
Tim, since we started this morning, okay, I've been thinking to myself, what is Tim's number? What is Tim's number? When is going to be an opportunist time to say, what is it? Okay, so when will I know?
When will I know?
And when will the people know? And so on behalf of the people, what's your number, Tim?
Okay, my number is related to 88 because it is 44. Which, as you can tell, if you're a mathematician or mathematically inclined.
If you're in grade one.
It's exactly half.
Yeah.
So 44 is the approval rating of the US President Donald Trump in economics, on the economy of the US. And that is the lowest it has ever been.
And it might well be the highest it is in the next 3 months.
Yes, exactly.
Because everyone, without exception, is gathering to combat this. You know, I don't know how to find a singular adjective to describe his behavior. But if you look at what China's doing, China's saying, for example, in the economic war that's going on,
right?
If anybody of you starts doing nice things with him, then don't expect us to do nice things with you. So people are uniting across all fronts against this, right. You know, individual's, yes. You know, power intrusion on the world economic order. And I think the consequences are not going to be trivial. And I haven't even begun to imagine what the reset looks like. What do you think the end game will be, Tim?
Jeepers. Too early to tell. Because the problem and the utility of Trump is he is erratic. And he sort of changes course very quickly. Some things are predictable, though. So you worry that it's not going to get any better. I mean, you know, there's certainly the enormous rise in the gold price, which, by the way, which is now sitting at a record, tells you that the expectation is that there's not going to be a dramatic change for the better. And then, of course, you know, it was so we're talking on Tuesday, Donald Trump then has now explicitly said that he wants the Federal Reserve Chair, Jerome Powell, to his termination can't come soon enough. So, you know, that cost the Dow and the S&P another 2.5%. I mean, it's wow.
You look at the Dow. The Dow has had its worst April, we're not finished yet, since 1932. Yes. It's the worst move it's ever had. So
yes, it's incredible.
But moving away from him, because you know the whole world is, you can't pick up anything or look at anything without hearing the T word. But we're not looking so cool ourselves. I mean, the foreign sales year to date in our equity market are 95 billion rand.
Okay? Yes.
Foreign sales in South African equities. Right. That's a lot. Right. If you look at the fact that Shell, who's been here forever, right, is pulling out. Shell, the petrol station, is pulling out. The petroleum company is pulling out. And I think that we finally, the chickens and the Pope's noses included, are coming home to roost. Okay. And let me tell you what I think is really wrong. I think that we are absent a fair market value arbiter. Okay. We need an adjudicator. We need someone to preside over all of these government tenders and awards and go, is this fair value? Because I promise you, this is how it works, Tim. I said to you, do you need some money? You go, yeah. Right. I say, well, can you sell me a pen? And I go, what sort of pen? Oh, a big pen, let's say. I say, well, how much must I pay for that? 10 million rand. I beg your pardon? It's only 4 rand 20. Right. He said, yeah, but I'll pay you 10 million. You give me 5 back and then we'll... Yeah, okay. The government authority to do deals and spend money has become an authority to invent value and share it. Okay, and let me give you just this week's examples. Yeah. This week, the Mpumalanga government paid 2 million rand for 22 laptops. Okay, go do the sums, Tim, and then walk into any iStore and see what you could do with a deal like that. The army, you know, our army, which is completely up to date and technically proficient and all of that, is now about to spend 180 million on a dodgy building somewhere in Midrand. Okay, and it's going to be approved. Okay. Gauteng government, has put out a tender for 100 million rand for, guess what you can buy for 100 million rand? Just have a guess, Tim, anything, office-wise. You know. I'll tell you what.
You could buy enormous toilet paper for Africa.
You're very close. You're insightful because that tender of 100 million rand is for paper shredders. Okay, Tim?
Right.
You can buy a murvelot, to use an accounting term, of paper shredders for 100 million rand. And so what we have here, if you stop the leakage, it's something I taught and succeeded in teaching at the post office, was what's the fair market value of the deal?
Yes.
And it saved. We found almost every deal that we looked was biased against us. But now it's a sport. This is more popular than any sport in South Africa. You transfer wealth under the guise of a fictitiously mispriced contract. If we stop that, Tim, we could lower taxes, man. It's that big. What do you think?
Yes. Oh, no, absolutely. I mean, I think it's so fascinating. I think it's a great idea. My question is, why is the tender process? The public sector has these very elaborate rules which require tenders, you know, competitive tenders for, you know, basically any large purchase. Why is that process not working?
Because it was never intended to work. It was intended as a smokescreen. It was intended as a foil. It was intended as a pretense to suggest that we're doing things by fair value. And it is, first of all, to do a transaction at fair value, you need to have some idea what fair value is. Okay. You need to know what the price is. You know, if I walked into your house and I said to you, Tom, I want to sell you the cell phone. And you go, yeah, okay, how much do you want for it? And I said, oh, 14 million. You go, Mark, would you like a glass of wine? You know, let's just sit down. But if I said to you, it's 12,000 rand, you'll go, oh, yeah, okay, well, let me have a look at it. You know, and so you've got to know where the ballpark is. And these manifest absurdities are only beginning to emerge now because of social media, which does fill that purpose. Okay, so you see these tweets and you see these accusations and you see these things. And I must tell you that for the past 30 years, the real, real theft of money has been, I think, at least in part, taken place in the transfer under so-called valid contracts that have been through a so-called, you know, proper vetting process. And it's bullshit. And if you had one or two people or a team of people presiding over all these deals, they would kick most of them out in like 10 minutes.
Isn't that what this presidency is supposed to be doing? Isn't there a unit in the presidency that is deliberately supposed to be looking at this exact issue?
But you first got to understand. You've got to have people qualified to understand what it, and this should maybe fall under SCOPA or something like that, where you've got this team you know, that you can call in, and they are entitled to get in experts. And it's got to be quick, because I promise you it is quick. Eh? If you asked me what the value of a house was, or the value of a car was, or the value of something, you know, that I'm exposed to, I'll be able to tell you within 10 minutes whether it's sort of in the ballpark, right? And you just look at the margins, and you look at, I mean, it's so simple. I think if we solve that, we've got lots of money all of a sudden.
This is the intersect between, you know, what's happening in South Africa and what's happening in the global economy. Because, you know, there's that very famous Warren Buffett saying about, you know, it's only when the tide goes out that you see who's wearing their swimming costume. And, you know, the tide is definitively going out, right?
Yeah, it is going out.
Government says that it desperately needs a VAT increase. My feeling is, well, okay, I understand that the taxes have to be paid and, you know, there is a sort of reason for all of this. But could you first just check to see whether or not what you are spending is spent on the right stuff? You know, without having done that, I'm not so sure about this tax increase. So our government's response to that has been, well, we've done hundreds and hundreds of expenditure checks. So my answer to that answer, which you know, is pretty obvious, is, well, how many of you actually put into practice?
Yeah, I don't even think they've got the right headings. Like if this was a heading.
Expenditure reviews.
Yeah, make a new heading. Yeah. Check all deals for fair market value and redo them. I mean, we spend what? 90% of our entire budget is spent on government costs and salaries, on social support, and on servicing debt. 90%. Huh? Yes. There's nothing left over to build with. And I would argue that we'd find an enormous amount of money if we had this kind of function in government. Anyway, I doubt anyone's listening, or more importantly, I doubt anyone wants to listen.
Okay? Yes.
Because there are too many people that are participating.
No, eventually the Pope's nose does come home to roost.
Yeah.
And so just, I think it is, you know, you can just see the plate tectonics of South African politics are really changing.
Yeah, they are changing, eh?
Yeah.
If we had a general election tomorrow, there'd be a different result.
Yeah, I know, there certainly would be.
Of that, I am convinced. And it's across all demographies and all groupings. Everyone has had enough. Or as we say in accounting parlance, ons is gat vol nou. We finished now. We've had enough. Okay. And so, but instead of carrying on this path of destruction, why doesn't someone, let's call it the president, call this thing to order and go, okay. Yeah. Can we get the 100 smartest people in South Africa in a room and can we control, alternate, delete? Sometimes it's time to control, alternate, delete. I can remember at university, we used to be given these computer programs to write in BASIC or whatever it was.
Right.
And the worst thing you could do, which we got given as an assignment once, was to try and fix someone else's program.
Right.
Okay. It was much better to start again.
Yes.
I think it's time for that.
All right.
Enjoy the holidays, peoples.
Enjoy the holidays, which are becoming less holiday-ish as we go.
Yeah.
For the right reasons. Mark, thanks very much.
Okay.